Produced on the traditional territories of the Tewa people, the Santa Fe Art Institute welcomes you to season two of the Tilt Podcast. I'm Courtney Andar. Today, we continue our conversations with the Midtown Engagement Partners, a collaboration of organizations working to ensure community empowerment in the development of the Midtown campus in Santa Fe. You will hear once again from Alma Rivera and Miguel Acosta from EarthCare, Michael Pride from UNM Design and Planning Assistance Center, Chris Jonas from Little Globe, and Tomas Rivera from Chainbreakers. Myself, Netsapan, Manzar, and Jamie are pleased to present to you Episode 10, Part 2, titled, We Are Stronger Together.
I think that this has been a great learning for me, for the Art Institute, to learn more about the deep, deep organizing work that you all do. It's so important. And I loved all of the work that you brought from the youth to the block party. I thought that was so amazing. And everyone just loved sort of seeing these visions that the youth had created. One question I have, it's just kind of, it feels like even though we've been doing this for maybe a year now, that we're just now getting into some places, like you said, Alma, where as a group, we could learn more together. You know, I think that it could be really helpful to sort of, but we never have time. Like time is like the issue all the time. Like you said, we're meeting so often, but we're doing so much and there's so much urgency to the work. It would be pretty amazing if we could really think of it as a learning community, as we step into some of maybe some of the recommendations from the report that are developed, and really understanding how each of our organizations or each of us personally understands some of the definitions and the terms and where we think we might want to take it from here, even beyond the work we're doing specific to Midtown, if there's like a larger ongoing conversation.
I think that, well, we have to make some, there's got to be some decisions made, right? There's some decision points. We can keep collaborating around activities and events and those kinds of things that are feel good kinds of activities, right? And that's not necessarily that difficult to do as long as there's some funding and, you know, support, that kind of thing, right? But I think that would take us down a road that eventually would end up undermining sort of some of the thinking and values that have started to come out of this. So I think if we're serious about transformative change, right, about real substantive change, coalition building is not easy, right? And coalition maintenance is not easy, right? It takes some real commitment and to values and principles and agreement on what those are, right? And then a reinforcement on a regular basis, some discipline in terms of monitoring compliance, basically, right? And also committing to the transformative change at the personal and organizational level and community level that's necessary to create the vision. You know, it's people talk about movement building, you know, it's revolution building, right? It's really, if we're looking for a place where everybody, you know, the kinds of things that we always say at the meetings, right? You know, where everybody is treated equally and there's equity and true participation in democracy, et cetera. You know, we're like 1% towards that right now. Right. So it'll take, you know, and it's not that it's not doable, but it would take that kind of commitment among the organizations and among other partners. And that, you know, that was like for me, and I won't speak for anybody else. For me, that was part of my resistance when there was a question about involving other people in other organizations in the planning for the events that we've had. Right. That they hadn't been through everything we had been through. Right. So it really was not fair. And also potentially dangerous to bring people in when they weren't, hadn't been part of the commitments that have been made on a regular basis, right? Every time we show up, that's a commitment that we're making, right? And also that they had not committed to any of the values or the principles, right, that we shared. not that they're bad people or bad organizations, it's just that they hadn't been part of the movement. So how could we sort of just slide them in sideways, right? And that's often what happens and what undermines movements is that kind of dilution, right? Or even institutionalization, right? If we were to hand this over to a city committee, for example, right, an office or whatever, it'll never happen, right? Because then it becomes part of a bureaucratic process rather than a community building process, right? And consider making those kinds of decisions. Knowing though that it does involve taking a particular orientation and position towards other institutions, right? And they always, you know, the fear is that they always translate it as a fight, right? you know, oppositional doesn't necessarily mean doesn't have to be adversarial, right? But that's harder for those institutions to understand, right? Immediately, because, you know, they operate on a basis of like, we've got 1 year to do this project and we've got this much money and this policy and this whatever. You know, and I'm talking about like city and county and even like private market forces, et cetera, right? And that's part of also, like I was saying, you know, this misunderstanding about difference and tension and what have you, right? That if we can't embrace that as where the creativity comes from, we're not going to get past this, right? But all, you know, recognizing, you know, differentials in power and power dynamics, even within our coalition, but also, you know, with the other institutions that we would have to stand in opposition to, right? To make them better and to change the, you know, ourselves and what have you. If it always becomes an adversarial thing and who's going to knock over whose statues or whatever, we just sort of keep walking, you know, marching into the corners, right? Rather than marching towards the future.
Think that this is a unique model, the way that we've come together in consensus decision making, in like we always say, like very disparate missions and different constituencies. Perhaps is this really the first time you've seen this, or are there other models that you had started with in your mind?
Right. That's a great question. I'd say this is definitely new ground for me. As you know, Jamie, being an architect, our typical style of community engagement, it's just, I think it was a significant leap or change in method just to sit down with community members, right? And have conversations and really invite them into the design process. This is just, it's unique for me in two ways. One is where the objective is not a design, right? So as a designer, I usually think, well, how can I make this happen on paper or in real life? And then the other way that it's unique is almost starting without a plan and saying, and really reminding myself all the time that we want to support a community-led process and just leveraging our position, our contract, our university resources to try to develop and support that space for this to happen. I know I do have colleagues at UNM who are, you know, have long experience and recognized scholarship in community-based participatory research. So this is my closest dive to it. It's so the way that it's similar is the idea of coming together with community constituents to identify the project, right? What is it that people want to know more about? and how do we go about figuring that out and trying to also identify the role, the skills, the assets that the academic researcher brings to that setting in a community that's not their own. What's interesting about this one is our contract is actually with the city. And some of those situations with my colleagues that do CBPR, their client is usually the community. The funding might come from a grant source or something like that. But so we have multiple clients. And so that has been really rewarding. I think coming, walking in, thinking of myself as a learner, coming in with humility, not being particularly attached to any particular outcome. And yet every now and then going, oh yeah, we have deliverables to bring to the city. So maybe we should turn this into a report or something. So that's, and I understand now that there are a few cities that are starting to pick up a similar kind of approach. We are part of that early adopter group. I like to think of that. And I think it would be really worth going back and taking a look at those other cases.
And of course, we're talking about Santa Fe. So we're talking about people who are of different cultural backgrounds, people who carry different histories, people who have power in different ways. You know, there's such a dynamic in Santa Fe where people who have economic power, for example, don't have all the power because they know that there's other forms of power in this town. You know, there's you could say cultural power, but there's I think there's more nuance to what power is in Santa Fe, and as a consequence, there isn't a single overriding crystallizing culture of power and culture in Santa Fe itself that you can easily sit and be comfortable with. You know, we can within our own little circles, cultural groups, but as soon as you get out on Agua Fría and start driving and you see all the various ways that people even think about traffic, driving and operations, you realize that there is no cultural consensus. And so as a consequence, you know, we are a town that it requires us to be changeable, listenable. You know, there's a flexibility that's a requirement, I think, for me, at least in Santa Fe, being an outsider.
What popped in my mind was that other phrase, with great power comes great responsibility. And I'm not assuming we have great power, but it does seem like our collective power is pretty undeniable, pretty evident. And part of what feels really rewarding for me or satisfying is is my feeling that all of you, all of the MAPS, the Midtown Engagement Partners, will continue to work together. That there's something that goes beyond the contract and beyond the project. And it might not be everybody every time, but this is now a networked, connected group that when one needs help, another will show up. I observe us developing a culture in the space that we share, that I'm even taking some of that to my classroom, to other settings. And so it has this opportunity to grow. And I'm really curious to watch how this unfolds. There is this big network of people who will all be advocating for pretty much the same things because we came together, we asked these questions we developed the questions together, but then we asked them in different ways and in different settings with different people. And then we came and brought the answers back and thinking about what is the story that this tells? How does this show up into a community? What's the community benefits we want to see? What are the goals on behalf of the community that get articulated and written or spoken, and then becomes kind of the mantle for everyone to carry? So, you know, you can't kind of go to Jamie and convince Jamie we ought to do ABC and get agreement from Jamie, and then go to Tomas and say, how about XYZ? Yeah, that sounds great to me. Well, how about ABC? Well, I don't know anything about that, right? So, you know, it's that kind of making deals in the back room with people that you know will go for it, and then finding ways to marginalize the voices that are against it.
Let's, you know, want to go a bit deeper about community and the community impact. How does the potential of the community benefits from an alliance like the Midtown Engagement Partnership?
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, the potential benefits are really astronomical. We like to look at Midtown. And for folks who haven't walked through the campus or don't know what we're talking about, you can even just look at a map and see how big we're talking about here. 64 acres is really huge. It is, when we say it's the heart of the city, we mean it is literally just there's this big gaping area that is Midtown right in the middle of the city. So the possibilities are not endless, but they are certainly so big that it's hard to even imagine what it could be like if it was directed by the people living and being affected by it. And I think that's one of the strengths of the work that we're doing here. And really, this is unique to Santa Fe, and it's also unique to the country in a lot of ways, having the community really lead this process and saying, this is what we need, this is what we want, and this is how we can dream together. We don't usually get a lot of opportunity to do that, especially around development, and particularly on projects like this. You know, this is not blighted area. This is prime real estate in the middle of the city. So people dream big. And I just like to offer one story about how that progression looked like in one of our community meetings early on. Is we started talking about, of course, things that are important to people, housing that's truly affordable for low-income people, making sure that we protect against displacement and community control so that we can guard against that. But then the dreams started coming, right? That's sort of the wonky thing, right? And people started talking about parks and community gardens and growing our own food. And I loved the conversation, the way that it happened. And this is why I believe in community work and community organizing so much. It started with talking about community gardens. And then someone said, well, with that much acreage, we can talk about community farms. And then someone said, we can start teaching people to grow our own food, not just for like, oh, okay, we have a little meal. And like, we could open our own food co-op. And then it grew from there, and it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And I think that that level of dreaming and bringing that to reality is what the possibilities we are faced with here in Midtown.
I guess I'll just offer, I think I've shared this in at least one of our community collaborative meetings, and that is the importance of blessing the land. So I talked about like the importance of like reclaiming our land, our culture, our traditions, our language. And I think that's also important in terms of stewardship and honoring Mother Earth. So whether it's the powwow ground that is, you know, being spoken about, or, you know, existing structures there that are there, looking at a traditional blessing to release, you know, that previous energy and look at like starting anew. I feel like that's important work that we're all called to in our own way in life. And I feel like where I am in my life, in my journey as a mother, as an activist, as a survivor, it's just that continuous healing. And ceremony is so much a part of that. So I just hope that that could be, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call it a block party, but I would hope that that could be the next invitation for this collective community gathering in terms of offering intention, offering blessing, and yeah, honoring Mother Earth and all that is to come for our community, not just in this space, but in so many other spaces. So thank you.
Thank you, Alma.
And thank you to all of our listeners and supporters out there. And a special thank you to our wonderful Midtown engagement partners. I'm Courtney Andar. Be sure to visit our website, sfai.org, where we've just recently announced the open call for the 2023 thematic residency, Changing Climate. Applications are due in April. That's sfai.org.